Welcome into the Story Crafters. I am World's Okayest Crafter, Jared. I am joined by Jeff and Nicole, Game Master Mom. How's everybody doing?
What's up? Tired.
Good, good.
What's going around?
We're here.
Nicole has a fancy new microphone, so she sounds, you know, crisp.
Yes. I hope I sound crisp. I'm excited to listen back to this.
It's going to make my job a lot easier. That's for dang sure. Man.
Well, before we get too far into things, let's go ahead and roll our D20s and get some organization happening here.
Something like that.
Something like that.
Yep, that's good.
What'd you get, Jeff?
I got a 6.
Sounds right. Nicole?
I got an 8.
Well, look at me. I got a 12.
Okay.
Hey, I think it's maybe one of the like...
are killing it.
You're right. I know double digits is like it might as well be a nat 20, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
that's a story crafter's nat 20 right there.
That is. Right. That is.
10 and above is a crit success. Mm-hmm. All right. So myself, then Nicole, then Jeff. All right. 12, 8, and 6. All right.
What you been up to, buddy?
I guess, honestly, not much. I haven't played D&D in a while. I won't belabor it. Due to mental health, I've actually paused my game for a short bit, which actually feels excellent to do. Very excited to get back into it when things are a little more, when the seas are a little smoother, you know? All good on that front. My exciting news, which is something that I should have talked about last episode, because when this comes out, it will be past already, is I'm going to Gen Con, which is, as we're recording this, I mean, it's actually happening right now. Gen Con is happening. I'm just going for the day on Saturday. So again, when this is out, that'll be past. But if I see you at Gen Con, hello. I'm very excited about it, though. It'll be my first time going to Gen Con and actually my first time going to any like large convention like that. So I'm a little nervous about it, but I'm pretty excited. So,
It's so amazing. I'm so jealous.
I'm just, it's only like 2.5 hour drive south of me from where I live. So I'm just going and meandering the vendor hall for the day. I've made plans to meet up with a few people, but, I'm really excited just to, experience it. And I'm sure it'll be overwhelming in the best way, but I think, it'll be a lot of fun. So I'll be happy to, report back on that in the next episode. Very excited about it. And honestly, can't believe that I forgot about it in the last couple episodes because I've had my pass for the Saturday, you know, for like a month now. But so that is going to be my weekend. Pretty excited. Beyond that, I really have not been doing much D&D. I've been playing a lot of Baldur's Gate 3, which is, you know, excellent. So it kind of scratches that itch. You know, no spoilers, but it's my second playthrough, but I'm well into Act 3 now, which is fun. So, you know, things are coalescing and coming together, which is a great time. Playing as a ranger, and I'm using a mod that you can have, I mean, whatever number of companions you want. So I'm actually wandering around with everybody, which is like 10 out of 10 if you have access to mods that can do that. Definitely recommend. The like banter and back and forth between all the characters is pretty incredible. Ladders are an absolute nightmare. Because then you have to wait for like 10 people to go up a ladder one at a time. And then you realize, I didn't want to be up here. And then you have to wait for everybody to get up there before you can go back down. So that is definitely its downfall. But aside from that, it's been a lot of fun. Beyond that, I know D&D. I have not been in the headspace to really actually do any crafting or anything like that. Starting to feel better. So I'm hoping to get back into some of that. But... my workshop where I do all that is also not air conditioned and it has been quite warm. So, which is, you know, I'm sure been a layer on top of all of that. So, but yeah, I, beyond that, excited to, you know, dive back into things slowly, but I'm just kind of trying to ease my way back in because I was definitely, drowning a little bit for a minute. So, that's me though. Nicole, what's been going on with you?
I mean, kind of same, except I'm not going to Gen Con, which is a bummer, but
I'm gonna turn your gain down.
Oh, me?
Yeah.
Oh, am I too loud now?
You're clipping your mic now.
Okay, how about now?
That's much better.
Okay. I'll try not to like progressively get louder as I get excited. Sometimes
no, it's fine. If you do that, just like the closer you are to the mic, will be better for that. So yeah. Okay. And go back again. Sorry.
Okay, yeah. I think like kind of same, except I'm not going to Gen Con and that's sad. And I do though, I keep seeing people post like, oh, we're getting set up for Gen Con or we're on the plane to Gen Con, which like luckily you don't have to do. But every time I'm like, oh, Jared's going. I need to ask Jared about it. And then like have not followed through on that thought yet. So I'm super excited you brought it up because I keep thinking about like you're like the one of us that gets to go this time, which is exciting.
I know, but also I'm super sad because in my mind, as I like close my eyes and picture it, I'm like, oh, it's going to be fun because I'm going to see these people and y'all won't be there. Next year, maybe.
Next year, maybe. I tried to make it happen, but my life is a mess right now. So I'm
not one round.
Traveling. traveling yeah. is one extra mess that I just cannot mentally afford right now.
Yeah. I mean, and frankly, you know, middle of Indiana is not necessarily a destination spot anyway, so.
But Gen Con. Oh, amazing.
It's the con, yeah, yeah.
That'd be fun to go to.
Next year. Trying to make it happen. I was so interested in going this year that I, like, have it on my calendar. It's, like, on my actual calendar of like the days of Gen Con, and last week I finally just deleted it because I was like, girl, you're not going, you need to stop looking at that, that's just making you sad.
It's one of those things too that it sells out so early that it's, I mean, you really can't drag. I mean, this year I almost missed out on it, and I knew the whole I was the way they have it structured, it's almost, if you're going 2 days, it's actually cheaper to buy the whole weekend pass, you know, but then it's all the accommodations and hotels and all that stuff. And since I'm close enough, I thought, you know what, it's my first time, I'm just going to go for the day. But so I kept dragging my feet, and then I almost completely missed the boat anyway, because things sell so quickly. But
yeah.
That's wild. That's wild. Okay, but what have I been up to other than being sad that I don't get to go to Gen Con? I just rolled my dice. I haven't actually taken this out of the like packaging place, but I got this like really cute little like miniature dice bag and miniature dice tray that Dragon, I want to make sure I don't butcher it, Dragon Master's Horde sent me. It's so cute.
They hand make
these. That's wild.
That's adorable.
They're like just so little and cute. It's like a little travel dice situation. And they sent me this one that's like very druid fairy-esque. And then they actually like made ones for my kids too. So we like talked about the fabrics and like my daughter's is like rainbow and unicorn and my son's is dinosaur. So it's like this really
that's so cool
cute little custom thing that I just got in the mail and I love it. And I think you can buy these on their Etsy, although I will double check on that. I know for sure if you want one, you could contact Dragon Master's Horde on Instagram and they would hook you up.
Yeah,
so fun.
Super cute.
That's exciting. Where are we on the book? We all want to know.
Where are we on the book? Yes, the book updates. Okay, so one of the editions, the standard edition, is done printing. They actually... Y'all, my life has been crazy. They sent me like this sneak preview thing in my email today. I have not looked at it. Like that.
Nicole.
Am I going to look at it before I go to bed tonight? Maybe, but I have not looked at it yet. But anyway, all done printing. So those are now in the shipping phase and they should be here in the US like mid-September. So
awesome.
That's exciting.
So exciting.
Deluxe editions are either they started printing today or they start printing tomorrow. And I think those are going to be shipped quite a bit faster because it's a really small number of them. It's a limited edition run. So I'll probably actually get those first, probably in August if I had to guess, but I don't have a for sure date. And then August 1st, which is tomorrow right now, but will be in the past by the time y'all hear this, August 1st, I'm dropping the animated version, which is amazing and cute and like 100% worth $5. If you didn't buy it, go buy it. It's so, so cute the way it turned out.
It's so cute.
It's like, it just melts my heart. It's so freaking cute. So that drops August 1st. And I think the only thing I really have left kind of in process is the coloring book. I still need to finalize my order with the printer that I'm going to go for the coloring book. So,
so exciting. It is wild, though, how much goes into all of that, like all the different aspects. You just think like, oh, how fun, it's a bundle. But then in reality, you making and finding, you know, people to make those a reality, that's so many things.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad that I didn't really know all the different pieces that I was signing up for, because I'm not sure if I would have done it. Like it was kind of good to go in blind and be like, this will be easy, right? No, it was in fact not easy, but will it be worth it? Yes.
I'm so excited. I'm so excited for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Man. Yeah, I haven't really been playing D&D. I don't think I played since the last time we met, when I played with some kids and we did the 15-minute D&D underwater one. Haven't really been crafting, just Etheria and life. I think that's really all I've been doing. And honestly, the Etheria, at least the Kickstarter stuff, obviously I'm not done with the whole world, but the Kickstarter piece is like so close to completion. It's so close.
That's exciting.
So that feels good.
Man. Do you have anything else for us?
I don't think so. If I do, I'll just interrupt and come right back. So over to you, Jeff.
I just like to see. Sometimes I just like to watch people like, huh?
Is there something I'm forgetting?
I played D&D. Let's keep this as a D&D podcast. I did play D&D.
That's one of us.
I played D&D last night, actually. And we went, they're kind of continuing this dungeon crawl through this place that I called the Ruins of Thornhold, which is the first kind of, this campaign that I'm making is very Legend of Zelda styled, inspired, like Ocarina of Time, where if you did play that, we're about to jump into some nerd history here. You would have to get these different gems, kind of, or what were they? They were not gems, but like they gave you different little sigils, kind of, and then you collected them all, and then you were able to create the Rainbow Bridge to Ganon's castle, right? So it's not, I'm not ripping that off completely, but there's an idea that there's like these, like each one of these temples basically will progressively weaken the this like barrier that is holding, like, cool. And, you know, blocking them from getting where they need to go. And they're in one of them now and they don't know it, which is hilarious because they went in so underground and backwards.
So okay. They're aware of the concept of this, though?
But they don't know where they're at. Because
awesome.
No one is asking the questions of where they, like, where actually, like, no one is trying to figure, they're like, where are we on the map? Because I drew a handmade, like, a small version of the map that is basically a crude version of my incarnate map, as if they picked it up off of a goblin. Or off, not off a goblin. Eldarion, she's one of the characters I made. She made it for them, and it's kind of just this like crude outline. So the measurements aren't exact, and neither are like where everything exactly is. But it gives you kind of a ballpark. And they were on this like this place called the Crystal Lake, and they were trying to get to a this sepulcher to rid a curse that the paladin got, and Well, one thing led to another. The paladin didn't show up to a couple sessions because he's 16 and has a couple different things going on. Well, they were like, well, we're going to go in this like hole, this dwarven thing that we found, and we're just going to see where that goes. Well, I already had a backdoor exit that went to that exact spot from the ruin of Thornhold. So I'm just like, crap, 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 crap. You're going in the wrong way. You're going in the wrong way. And so they went into this first temple, basically thinking Legend of Zelda still, from the opposite end and underground. So all of the puzzles and traps are backwards.
Kind of awesome though, honestly.
So it's like they're like, this doesn't make any sense. I was like, because you're not going the right direction. Why is the trap falling this way and pushing us like out? Or I'm like, because you're but no, it's,
I'm gonna be honest, it's though
been, it's
that's
funny.
Kind of genius. Even like if you had planned that, that's kind of a genius idea to have like a backwards dungeon and just have it be like it, you know,
it's so fun because it's not a huge dungeon. They're only level 3. They just hit level 4 because we had a mini boss. And I had this thing a couple sessions ago where I bit off way more than I could chew, and that was like, I gotta take a step back and let the players just kind of like, I was like, think big picture with an overarching story, but let's think of like every like game or two as its own little story, right?
Yeah.
And that has made the table conversation so much cooler. But we had a little mini boss, and I made my big bad in this campaign one of the big bads. There's two. One of the big bads is named Malachar, and his name is Malachar the Dreadbringer. And so he basically is in this place, a shade version of him, a shadowed version of him. And this whole thing, I remember talking about it last episode, how all the players are seeing like shadowed versions of themselves. And so they finally met Malachar last night, but they met his small form in like a mini scale, right? And he was a shade of him, and so he was able to flicker step and stuff like that, like your Misty Step. I renamed it to Flicker Step. So it's just right. And it was awesome. It was a great time. One of the players got downed, but the cool thing is if you guys remember me talking about how I have two players that physically in game like got into a fight where the one dude like cast Sacred Flame on him and stuff. That arc that I've been waiting to happen is starting to happen, where he went from this like really like passive aggressive, like I'm not going to care about the party, and he's a cleric, to the person that he was fighting with, he was just like, nope, I'm healing you the whole time now. Like, and it's like this tiny little small arc of this is the thing about D&D that's awesome, is you get these small little player stories that happen in it, and they ended up beating the boss, the little mini boss. Of course, it's not actually him, so he was just like, yeah, we'll meet again, and you know, disapparated into the shadows. But the other thing that was really funny is my artificer was, there was a treasure chest at the end of the hall, right? And sorry about that if you guys could hear, that was my dog that just like tail thwacked my guitar.
Making music.
So your dog's a bard.
My dog is a bard.
I love it.
But so there's a chest at the end of this corridor. And my artificer, he goes, I cast Grease directly behind me. And I was like, where are you going with this? And then I realized, he was like, yeah, I cast Grease on the two other players. He's like, so I can get to the chest first, because they all like race to the chest. And so, he's
incredible.
Like, don't forget, this is difficult terrain now. And I was like, oh, you're right. I thought he was going to like cast Grease and then like light it on fire.
Light him up.
But because that's not out of the wheelhouse for this party, is just, you know, mass violence against each other. And so he would cast Grease, and I was like, this is so much fun right now. But yeah, that's what
it's awesome.
That's what I was doing. I haven't really painted a mini. I painted one mini the other day. Just as kind of like I need a good like rogue witch doctor. I've got an idea for a class that I want to play in a potential campaign or a potential game at one point. So I got him all painted up, but nothing crazy. But I did want to real quick. I know this is I wasn't planning on doing this, but both of you guys have said it today, and I feel like we should talk about this here. Guys, it's okay if you take a break from stuff. It is A-okay. All right. Mm-hmm. Everything in moderation. And if you're not feeling a certain way, it's okay. Take a break. Don't feel bad. You matter. Your mental health matters. It's okay. Mm-hmm. Moving on. Okay. Sorry.
On that note,
yeah.
Y'all may have noticed that Charlie is not among us tonight.
Yes.
I was, to be clear, I was given one job when Jeff was like, Jared, why don't you do the intro tonight? Just mention that Charlie's not here with us. And as your ears might remind you at this moment, I did not do that.
Yeah.
He's fine, guys.
He just works so hard. He's such a hard worker.
Too hard.
Oh my God.
Flood his inbox with love and support and just tell him that you're thinking of him and doing all the things for him because he definitely does need it. We love Charlie. Charlie, we love you, bro.
I feel like I'm gonna mail him a casserole or something. I don't know. I feel like I need to send some kind of comfort item to him and his wife and be like, I'm sorry that things are so much.
He works too much. Too hard.
Working,
too hard, guys.
Working a lot. Yeah.
That's man. And also too, have you guys ever noticed too, this summer feels really just heavy. Like things are just heavy this summer for some reason. I don't know why. I don't know what it is. If you guys are feeling that too, let us know in the comments and stuff. Maybe it's just us and we're all, you know, going nuts with trying to do this and run life and everything like that. But I feel like I can't get 2 feet off the ground without something kicking up with it. Mm-hmm. Like that metaphor made no sense, but you know,
I was literally just going to say, what a good metaphor. I was like, that's kind of awesome.
Man, I don't know. Yeah. This summer's been weird. At least I think it's been weird, but I don't know.
Agreed.
It has been weird. And I mean, obviously keeping everything confidential and no details, I can tell you that as a therapist for my day job, that people
you're muted.
Which actually is hilarious because you're keeping it confidential and then you muted yourself and you're just... You're still muted.
Am I back?
That was actually incredible.
That was really good timing. Do I still sound crisp? Is my mic on?
You're
I
good.
Yes.
Y'all. Anyway. Before I muted myself... not sharing any details, but I can tell you that generally the population is not well this summer.
Yeah, stuff's been going around. Stuff's been going around. But if you need a way to make yourself feel better, you should order candles from Firelight Maples.
Yes, you should.
I have burning right now for the first time. Cursed sales. Oh. And it is what I say this every single time. I think it's the best smelling candle that I've ever experienced. It is incredible. 10 out of 10.
Mm-hmm. What's that code they can use there, bud?
What is the code? I believe it's StoryCrafters for 15% off.
I think
right?
so. 15%
it's been
off.
So long.
That's right.
15% off your purchase at firelightfables.com. Mm-hmm.
That was good, bro. That was good.
Also, if you want to see me and my 3-year-old review/unboxing of Firelight Fables candles, you can check that out. It's on Game Master Mom and Story Crafters. Just make sure you have the sound on because is the cutest.
It's excellent.
It is pretty cute.
You get to hear my 3-year-old trying to say D&D, which he always says dandy instead of D&D, which is so cute. He's always like, can we play dandy?
That cute little Texas accent.
Thank you. Like the cutest thing. Y'all probably disagree, but of course I say y'all. I don't think I have that much of an accent, but my children definitely do. I don't know how.
That's so funny.
It happens.
Genetics, man. It's the air. It's that, you know, rich Texas air down there. It just kind of gets you talking a little, you know.
It does.
I'm going to stop. I'm from the Midwest, so I'm sure that there's plenty of things that I say. Moving on. I'm not from Wisconsin, so, you know, I have that going at least.
I was going to say, like, where's the only NO?
But anyway, moving on, before we offend more, you know, regions of people, let's go ahead and dive into the lore.
Oh my God, Jesus Christ. Hey, what's up? How's it going? If you are one of those few people that do pause the podcast, thank you for pausing the podcast to come back to this for this lovely lore segment brought to us by Jared. So, Jared, take it away, dude.
Let's get into it. We're going to be talking about Lathander, the Morning Lord. In the world of Faerun, few deities shine as brightly, both literally and metaphorically, as Lathander, the Morning Lord. He is the god of dawn, renewal, creativity, and birth, a patron of springtime and fresh starts, of second chances and the noble pursuit of hope. His followers believe that each sunrise is a promise, that no matter how dark the night has been, there is always a chance to begin again. His tenets encourage beauty, innovation, and compassion. But Lathander is not merely a gentle gardener of flowers. He is also the god of youthful zeal, of bold plans, and the kind of idealism that topples old orders. Clerics of Lathander often serve as healers, diplomats, or artists, and temples to the Morning Lord are typically bright, airy structures filled with stained glass and open courtyards, mainly aligned so that the first light of dawn pours directly through their central halls. Services are held at sunrise, and worshippers often greet the day in silence, in meditation, or quiet song, believing that the first light carries divine insight. Symbolically, Lathander is often represented by a sunrise over water or a rose-colored disc partially veiled by mist, both capturing the balance of beauty and uncertainty that the dawn brings. His color palettes include soft golds, warm pinks, early morning blues. You might find his faithful wearing circlets or robes embroidered with stylized rays of sunlight or bearing simple lanterns that they fill each morning as a personal ritual of faith. Despite his associations with life and light, Lathander's story isn't without shadows. He is rumored to be an aspect or evolution of the older sun god Amonator, which I'm sure I'm butchering, so I apologize, and his failed dawn cataclysm, which was an ambitious attempt to reshape the pantheon and rid the world of evil. This caused massive divine fallout and the death of other deities. This event is largely lost to time, but lingers as a cautionary tale. Even the most radiant intentions can burn too hot. In published D&D lore, Lathander appears across several Forgotten Realms adventures. In Curse of Strahd, for instance, worship of Lathander persists in Barovia under the name of Morning Lord, a flickering hope in an otherwise bleak land. Though Strahd himself mocks such a faith, the presence of Morning Lord worshippers in Barovia speaks to the quiet, stubborn persistence of light, even in a realm ruled by shadow. To worship Lathander is to believe in beginnings, messy, imperfect, beautiful beginnings. For adventurers, townsfolk, and even those who have fallen far, his teachings offer the radical idea that tomorrow doesn't have to look like today, but only if we're willing to rise and work towards it. Ooh. I watched Superman recently, and I feel like we needed a little bit of hope core, so my mind went to Lathander. So
I like it. I was wondering how much this was inspired by you're playing Baldur's Gate, because I know there's a few really choice items from Baldur's Gate that fall under this man's accessories.
Baldur's Gate is such a good example of integrating deities, whether it's the like original D&D pantheon or whether it's your own homebrew pantheon. That to me is the perfect example of being able to use them in your world and just kind of having them exist, and they can kind of be a big part. You know, if you have a paladin or cleric or whatever, you know, it can be kind of a major storyline, or it can just kind of be there. But yes, for sure, I love the pantheons, because it is like when you're world building, it is suggested that you start with the pantheon and kind of build down. And when I made my homebrew world, I didn't understand that, and I didn't do that. Mm-hmm. And now now I feel like I'm on the other side where I get it, where it's like, okay, well, if you have a deity, Lathander, well, then that deity probably has worshippers. Where do those worshippers go? What? How do they worship? What are those people? You know? And it just kind of has this trickle-down effect. But anyway, Lathander.
I love it. And I do appreciate the little, like, ray of light and air and sunshine and things that feel hopeful. I think we all do need that.
Yeah. To piggyback off of where you can find them too, I'm on the Forgotten Realms fandom. There's many temples dedicated to this guy. I've played Baldur's Gate, but not to the capacity that I really remember a whole lot of everybody. Which I need to replay it. And by replay it, I mean get past Act 2. I video games for me, that they're not like MMOs. I'm like, yeah. Anyways, but I'm a massive Waterdeep fan, and there's a temple dedicated to him in Waterdeep. So the Spire of the Morning.
Nice. Yeah.
And so, yeah, if you're in Waterdeep, go say hello and pay your respects. Also, I love his symbol. His symbol is so cool. The painted one, that like stained glass that you were talking about, is so pretty. I would love to actually see that in a temple, because it doesn't look like traditional stained glass. Yeah. It's very muted, and it's so like tranquil looking. Sometimes stained glass to me can like look like chaotic.
Yeah, kind of harsh when the colors are really saturated. Yeah.
Yeah. This is very mellow looking, but then the flag is really cool too.
The first paladin that I played, it was the first character that I played long term, and I've talked about it before. My character in Icewind Dale, in Rime of the Frostmaiden, was the campaign. He was a paladin who served Lathander, and I never had a great understanding on the world and the character enough to really see that to fruition. But I love the idea of that. Again, kind of like if you've seen the new Superman movie, it's great because it's like Superman is just so pure, you know? And I think that's so fun as a D&D character, where it doesn't mean that you are the self-righteous jerk that's always, you know, staring down your nose at people. It's just like having that hopefulness, having that kindness, and like genuinely wanting good, you know, is something that I think sometimes gets so lost, and sometimes it's not fun to play that, but it is really fun to kind of be able to instill that into your games, into your worlds, whether it's an NPC or a PC, you know. I think it's a lot of fun to explore those avenues and just have someone who is just genuinely good. And Lathander, I think, is the perfect deity for characters like that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that is hard to play sometimes. I played a paladin at one point, and he was the lawful good paladin. And I was like, this is so vanilla. Like,
yes.
I don't think
that it is oftentimes the default that it feels very vanilla. But I think there's a lot of space there to explore that more and to realize, you know, being lawful good does not mean you don't have flaws. It doesn't mean that you're not short-sighted or, you know, what have you. I think it can really be. I think it's one of those things that it is very, like, stereotypical, you know, Mm-hmm. You have the knight in shining armor who's just annoyingly good, and it doesn't always have to be that, you know?
Yeah, yeah. At that point, I didn't know like how to or like my GM didn't know how to make that more fun. So I was like, dude, I still want to play Paladin. I was like, but I want to go Oathbreaker. So he's like, wait, mm-hmm. you need a good reason to do an Oathbreaker because it's technically a villain.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, like I'll trust you, bro. Like I'll follow your lead. Like whatever you're laying down, like let's do it. So the trigger for me for that, for how I did that, was he killed my brother in game.
It's a good clarification that it was just in game. It's
like emotional, like. thing. Yeah, no, I don't think my GM that I played with would be able. I mean, everyone could. I mean, never. That's a whole nother tangent.
Move past it.
That's a whole nother tangent.
sometimes I love my GM. Not to acknowledge what I say.
Let me just say, I would.
All right, that's the subtitle for the episode. And can the GM kill Jeff's brother? Who would win in a fight?
I'm gonna put money on my brother. I'm just gonna be honest with you.
From what I know of your brother, that's a good bet.
Yeah, I'm gonna. Yeah. What the hell is happening in this episode?
We went from Lathander to killing Jeff's brother so quickly.
I don't know.
Love you, Jeff's brother. Wish you the best. You're gonna do great.
When we're here, it's the perfect balance. When one person is gone.
The feng shui of the room is off, yeah.
Yeah.
That's... Paladins are interesting. That was something else that I wanted to talk about too, and this plays in perfectly. The paladin in my party that's cursed is very, very like... He's a conquest paladin. So he's just like for the quest, right? But he's really role playing into the like prayer aspect of paladins, which has been really fun at the table. And so they're fighting the Shade of Malachar, and he literally in game, I love what he did this for this. He went, it was all purposely for RP, had no standing to do this. He was getting so mad that he couldn't hit the bad guy, right? That he was like, he's in RP, like said a prayer real quick, dropped his sword and his shield and was like, I don't need materials to fight you. And proceeded to roll some of the craziest rolls and fisticuffed the Shade and that's then killed sick. It. He got the, how do you want to do this? And I don't fudge that's my awesome. Health numbers. Like, and so like naturally this played out to where the paladin gets to be the one to do the radiant damage against the Shade with fisticuffs. Like that's how awesome is that? And I was just like, dude, like that is really cool way to play paladin, you know, where you're not just the knight in shining armor that gets to do everything, let alone he's cursed anyways. So
nice.
It's so been
fun.
It's been fun. Paladins are... I feel like GMing for paladins is way more fun than playing paladin.
And I think that is what I've discovered as a DM, is that it is really fun to have deities in your world that you can kind of pull and have, whether it's directly affects a player. Like I finally now, my one player who was playing a rogue that his character met an untimely end is now playing as a cleric. And so it's been fun to just like have that aspect in the world, you know, where it's been there, but now it's kind of more at the forefront, and it's really fun to explore. The character that I'm playing in the Journey to Ragnarok campaign that I'm a player in is a paladin, and it's a custom subclass that's specific to that, but it is really fun to have your player kind of like mutter an oath to, you know, the All Father or something like that as you're going into battle, or you know, before you know, you're taking a rest or something. It's just a fun dynamic thing that really does make the world feel alive and more dynamic, you know?
Yeah. And they're like getting into it, like RP wise at the table too, where like he literally is like, he's starting to do like the hand gestures and stuff like that. Like they walked in this room and he was like, I put my hand on the shoulder of Maine, who's another character, and I say a prayer to I forget which one of my gods he worships right now. I should know that. Zarethia, I think. I made a bunch of them for it. But anyways, but it's just really cool, and it's really fun to see your players actually do stuff like that too.
Yeah.
If you can play a paladin well, that's awesome.
Yeah.
But because it's like paladin is so cool when it's played in a unique way. And I think of Archon the Cruel from Critical Role. That's Joe Manganiello's paladin.
Deeper into Critical Role than I've ever.
I'm sorry. Campaign one. Just look up if you want to know about it. It's a massive spoiler. Just look up Joe Manganiello, Hand of Vecna, and just watch that clip.
It's a pretty awesome clip.
It is quite literally probably one of the most shaking D&D moments that a player has ever done, I think. And yeah, anyways, I could go on a whole tangent. I love his company, that Death Saves. That's such a cool company. Any other comments, questions, concerns about Lathandir?
Yeah, I don't think so. I would just encourage everybody, use deities in your world, have a pantheon, even if it's a loose pantheon. The one that's pre-established is excellent, or make your own. I would 10 out of 10 recommend it, though, because it just adds a whole other layer to your world.
Yeah.
That's something that I really have not thought about in my homebrew world at all. So I'm gonna consider that and maybe bring some of that layer into my game, because I do think that could be super fun.
I think it's interesting too, because I think a pantheon like that is something that is easy to just kind of have in the background. And then you can always later on kind of point back and be like, no, that god was there, or you know, that the cleric of that god was here, you know. And it doesn't always have to be an in your face sort of thing, but it can always just kinda, again, Baldur's Gate does it beautifully, where it's like you kinda eventually understand who's actually pulling on all the reins, and you know how the story is kind of bigger than yourself, and even though you might still be the hero in that story, there's all the realms outside of that, you know, which is fun.
Yeah, I'm starting to incorporate gods more into my world. The problem I have with it is it's so, if you don't know it like through and through, and someone mentions it and brings it up, it's like, oh, what? Oh, right. yeah, you can definitely pray to that deity.
Sure you can.
I don't know what they're going to do.
You can pray to whatever you want.
I don't know. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Look at that. Learning new things about the D&D lore. Look at that. Because we're all learning stuff.
That's what we do.
Man, leveling up our knowledge there. And speaking of leveling up, today's topic is, how do we handle player level ups? So we're gonna kick it off, Jared.
Yeah.
How do you handle player leveling at the table?
So sorry, I finally right now just got that fly that has been pestering me this entire podcast session. So you listeners maybe didn't know it existed, but it just landed right in front of me. And sorry, fly. But all right, player leveling. I do not do experience based. It is more kind of flow with it. I don't have stringent set things in mind that kind of, when it feels right, the players are going to level up. I try to have it be more narrative based, with a caveat being like, if my players are intentionally like, let's do 15 side quests in a row, that's going to take, you know, 3-4 months or whatever, then at that point I might be like, yeah, you know, you would have accrued enough experience that you would level up, you know. That said, I try to have all my side quests kind of tie into the major story anyway, but that's an aside. I like to do it at the table. In fact, the last session that I DM'd, my players did level up to level 10. And so, like, we finished the battle and they kind of went to sleep. And I loosely kind of described them kind of feeling empowered, you know, in the morning when they woke up. And that is something that I think I want to lean into more in the future, is really kind of describing how and why in this dice rolling game that we play, in a world that's supposed to be so immersive, it is sometimes hard to explain, like, yeah, suddenly you just have new abilities, you know. So I think I'm going to try to lean into that more and try to have it be a little bit more story, like drive the actual player leveling up with some story bits, you know. Maybe it's pulling from their past and being like, as you know, feel imbued with this power, you're thinking of, you know, your long lost love or something like that, which I think could be fun to kind of make it make a little more sense, because there's nothing to me that feels more immersion breaking in D&D than being like, yeah, you have all leveled up, you have new abilities, and you know, you just go on your merry way.
Yeah.
That said, I don't want to go super deep into multi-classing, but I kind of have a standing rule at my table too of, if you're going to multi-class, it has to make sense for your character. If for instance, if you want to take a level in rogue and there's no rogues in the party and you've never experienced that, then it's going to be exceedingly difficult for your character. You know, maybe a magic-based class would be a better example, but I always like to have that kind of as the baseline of, it has to make sense. You know, if you're just a fighter and you're just leveling up in fighter, you gain that experience. You know, it would make sense that your skill set continues to broaden. But if you multi-class, having like, it has to be somebody you've journeyed with, or there has to be some downtime where you're studying. You know, maybe if you're taking a level in wizard or something, maybe you found a grimoire that you have been studying every night on the road, and then finally when the time comes to level up, maybe that can be in wizarding. You know, maybe you've tapped into something in the weave, you know, that you're finally able to do that. But yeah, it's something that I've handled in different ways in the past, but moving forward, whenever it might be months, frankly, before my players level up again, because it's not something, especially at higher levels, that I like to pass out freely, you know. But I definitely want to try to make it a little bit more story driven, and kind of maybe it's even taking, you know, 2-3 minutes to describe each character individually if it's not as a group, and see how that works. But what about you, Nicole?
I feel like my answer is kind of boring, but what I do in my homebrew world, which is not super creative, is I think every time I've leveled people up, I've done it kind of the same way, where like someone, some kind of powerful figure in the world, usually someone that they had to like fight and defeat or fight someone else to get to, trains them and teaches them in their new skill. So it's like, okay, like you have now won the favor of the sorceress of the ancient forest, and as a gift she's going to train you and teach you and give you this new skill set, which for me, like the leveling up process is super simplified. It's like, okay, now you're level 2. So now instead of one attack, you can have 2 attacks. Like you can have fireball and an ice spike now, not just fireball. So usually what I'll do is I'll, just to simplify it so it's not overwhelming, I'll have pre-prepared, like, okay, I think my characters might level up whenever this happens. So I'm going to give all of them 2 options that make sense within their class. I haven't had anybody multi-class yet. I was thinking about that while you were talking. I was like, huh, is multi-classing a part of my homebrew world? It could be. It hasn't come up yet. But, you know, usually I just give them 2 options that make sense to who their character is and, like, the ways that I know they like to play anyway. I'm like, she can teach you this or this. Which one do you want? And that's sort of the level-up process. It's almost this, like, learning apprenticeship, kind of like, this is how you got the new skills. You got it from this person who's an expert who you
love that.
won the favor of in some kind of way, or like, you know, so
almost like a boon in some ways, you know, like you've just been blessed and now you just have these, which that's really cool. Actually, I love that.
Yeah, it just makes it really simple. I think if I continue to play with like the same set of characters, like I'm thinking about like my daughter's character, right? I think she's like level 4 at this point, but she's a pretty frequent member at my table, as you might imagine, as someone who lives with me. So eventually she's going to be getting higher up in the levels, and I'm thinking about maybe trying to expand and mix it up and like throw in something that still makes sense but is a little bit different than the formula I've been using. So I don't know, I'm interested to hear what other people do too, because
more thoughts are popping into my head. That is one thing that I do that is not maybe popular with a lot of people. I keep all of my players at the same level regardless of if they're have been present or not. I think it's just easier. I think it for me at my tables, it just levels the playing field then, you know, where it's, you know, if I were DMing in different groups, I could see maybe like kind of, you know, rewarding, it sounds weird to even say that, rewarding somebody who's able to be there more by maybe their character is leveling up more because their character is literally gaining more experience in the world. But for me, I just keep everybody the same. I have a player who's not been there for a few months because they had a kid, and like his character is going to be the same level as everybody else when he comes back. You know, they've leveled up once or twice since he's been gone, and he's going to come back as that. And, you know, there'll probably be some narrative thing that we agree upon to say this is how he gained these new abilities and experience. But the other thing I will say is all my players use D&D Beyond, and so we tend to level at the table together and just be, you know, I give them however long they need, and then we just kind of go around the table and I just say, you know, you don't have to spill all the beans, but you know, what are the new things that you have that you're excited about, and give everybody a moment to just kind of like talk things through and metagame a little bit. Like last time my sorcerer was it's like, can I ask everybody's opinion, should I take this spell or this spell, you know, and I don't it doesn't bother me. Like I'm fine with my players table talking in that, you know, when we're leveling like that and being like, oh, well, my character has this spell, so maybe you should go this direction. You know, I think that's fun. But
yeah. And like, how is that any different? How is that any different at doing it at the table than if, like, I don't know if everyone does it, but I've been in groups where like, we'll like level or not even level, but we'll have like a separate chat going on. Just the players like, oh, I think this is happening, you know, and like come up with kind of like a, hey, like the game is going this direction, like, okay, well that fight sucked, like, you know, something like that. And so like that's doing that, I think that's totally fine. I had a question for both of you guys. Do you do fixed HP, especially if you use D&D Beyond, or do you use manual rolled?
I've done both, and I at this point I've kind of just left it up to the players. We've vaguely kind of talked about, you know what your hit die is, and I kind of like, I have a couple players who don't roll physical dice, which boggles my mind as I sit here with my hoard of dice as I'm just rolling things, you know, as much as I can, but some of them just use the app and it's just simple. So, you know, in that case I'm just like, you know, just if you want to level automatically or if you want to risk it, I'm not a big stickler on it, personally.
There is a slight amount of judgment for those that don't roll physical dice.
Yeah, agreed. I don't know if they don't have the, like, you know, whatever compartment in your brain that it is that scratches an itch. You know, they must not have collected rocks as kids, I guess.
Clearly, why would you not want to? That's the part I don't understand. It's like, why do you not want to?
The clicky clack that gives you all the serotonin.
Right. Like, yeah.
Come on.
I mean, bring it up with a therapist, I guess.
I really like the manual rolled hit die because it's really fun to have everybody roll their hit dice and see what they get. And it's fun because like we have a rule, and I'm pretty sure, I don't know if it actually is an official rule or not, like you re-roll ones because that's stupid.
Yeah, I don't know that it's an official rule, but I would do the same.
But you roll your hit die plus your con modifier. So you're at least getting something. And so what we do, I always do boss, or it's basically after bosses that my guys level up. And I also am similar, Jared, where the whole table levels up pretty much. Because from a GM perspective, especially because I do so much, like I use D&D Beyond a lot for encounter building. I'll take stat blocks and stuff of creatures and things like that, but I'll change the names or something like that. And it just makes it a little bit easier to gauge where the fight is going to be. The other thing, you mentioned multi-classing. I've got a few players that like multi-classing a lot. And for me, leveling, if you're doing multi-classing, I agree. Like, it has to have a reason that's like, why would a barbarian be a sorcerer? You know?
Right.
Like, but there is a thing in D&D where you actually have to have certain stats to be able to multi-class.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's an option to disable that if you use the app, or forego it if you do the book versions. But there is an element to say, like, hey, if a barbarian does want to go wizard or sorcerer, it needs to have a high enough intellect.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And if that character doesn't, sorry, dude, you know, you're going to be swinging at trees for a bit more, you know? But I love the... What I like doing and what my players are really good at doing too is they like finding books, because I like hiding spells in books. And the way that I kind of play it as like a, you learn the spell, and unless it's like something crazy powerful, like cantrips, I don't really care if you like now know a cantrip, because like a lot of D&D characters do have magic. Like, I mean, even rangers and rogues have magic.
Yeah.
Like, you can go, arcane trickster is a core rogue class.
Right.
So they can keep the spells if they learn them and stuff like that, but they have to take, you know, in-game time to actually learn the class, learn whatever that is. So if we level, right now they just leveled after beating that Shade of Malachar. Well, they're in a dungeon currently. So it's like you don't have real time to go and learn stuff, but like, because I don't really care about going back to town and resting and doing all that stuff. Like, it's like you level because you hit the milestone to do it. And they'll probably, you know, board up the doors and stuff like that and take a long rest. And then I'll throw in some flavor, you know, of similar like what you do, Jared. It's like, you know, you wake up renewed and things like that. I had something else that I wanted to ask too. I don't remember.
I think it is interesting. The way I like to treat magic is kind of from Baldur's Gate, honestly, where it's like you have the weave that is kind of the word for all of the magic in the world. And I explained it a little bit when we talked about lizard folk. But, you know, people tap into the weave in different ways. So you might have a barbarian who is able to learn some spells, you know, because of this, you know, maybe it was even somebody in their backstory that, you know, allowed them to have a glimpse into that. And now in their newfound adventures, you know, maybe they come across a tome or something like that, that is akin to that and kind of has these memories flooding back, you know, that does allow them to kind of tap into that weave. I like to think of it as more like raw and unattainable in some ways, and you almost just like can poke holes in it and get, you know, a little bit of magic here and there, you know. Yeah. You have people who are really in tune with it, you know, your scholars, your wizards, you know, and then you have, you know, your warlocks who get it from somewhere else entirely. And yeah, I think it's just really fun to explore, much like pantheons and deities. I think it's just really fun to kind of have this like idea of magic existing almost as an entity, you know, and it being more something that is attainable rather than something that some people have and some people don't. You know, I think of it, it's probably from Star Wars, I think of it kind of like the Force is like the weaver moving through all living things, and some people are aware of it and some aren't, you know.
Yeah. I think that also comes down to like your game too. Like some people's version of magic is Tolkien, where, you know, the wizards and things like that are really the only magical things. Right. I'm pretty sure I got that right. Someone's going to yell at me in the comments like, no. I love Lord of the Rings, but I don't know it like I do Star Wars. But like, and from what I understand with Lord of the Rings and everything after reading the books, like magic is very, especially in the third age, is very, you know, it's not very,
very rare
anymore.
Yeah.
So Gandalf using his light to, you know, basically, deflect the Nazgul, that's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people think that, like, oh no, he's not that strong, because they think of magic as, you know, mages from Final Fantasy, things like that. Right. You know, like, that's the version of magic. And so there's different ways I think that you can handle that. And in my world, there's magic everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so it's like, it's very normal to see, like, oh yeah, that dude, he just cast me, like, he just, you know, flick his finger and start a flame, Johnny Storm style.
Like, right. You know.
So that's pretty common in my world, but it's not for everybody else's, let alone also too, like, I mean, Charlie, I would love to hear how Charlie handles leveling up, because his world is so detailed, and it's arcane, and it's post-apocalyptic. Right.
And his world is so unique too, because it has so many different factions and groups playing in the same world in different areas and regions and things that would be, I mean,
man,
anything Charlie has to say about D&D, I typically find pretty fascinating. Yes. So.
Oh, yeah.
It always kind of blows my mind every time he talks about it. I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah.
What?
I always think I'm a creative DM, and then I talk to people like Charlie, and I'm like, oh, no, I'm not. All right, cool.
Yeah. No, I like that, though. Like, I mean, definitely, like, create your world how you want to create your world, but, like, that kind of idea of, like, is magic common and everywhere, which, like, it is in my world, too, but, like, that's a good point that's not always the case. Like, sometimes magic is, like, reserved only for, like, superheroes. Like, only rare people have the magic.
Exactly.
There's a world that I'm playing. I don't know when it will come to fruition, because again, it's kind of been tabled, but there's a world that I've built that is very like what I as a kid viewed knights fighting dragons as, you know, that it's very low magic, and anybody, like, everybody is basically just common folk, so then the heroes really stand out. They're very stark against, you know, the sea of, you know, with nothingness, you know, that if anybody has any special abilities like that, it automatically makes them kind of like a superhero in a lot of ways. Really excited to explore that world, because my main world, my main story in the Abyssal Tide, magic is very, it's everywhere, you know. So I think it is fun to have those high magic versus low magic. You know, we talked about a long time ago, I think it was in the Purple Rocks, that magic was outlawed, you know. And I think it's fun to have things like that too, where it's like, maybe people do have it, but it's just, you're not allowed to use it here, or, you know, maybe you have a region that has an anti-magic field around it, you know, or something. Maybe it's a whole town, you know.
Yep.
It is. It's really fun to play with that slider and kind of be like, you know, where is that setting at, you know?
Yeah. I love that, where like magic is outlawed too. Like, there's I have one city where it's very much like just it's ruthless, but they have zero magic. Like, there is a no questions asked if you're basically gonna get the death penalty.
Dang.
And so it's like, man, you get these you get all sorts of people doing all sorts of stuff. That's because they're used to it. And you throw that in, it's like, whoa,
wait. I mean, that's a huge handicap to a lot of players.
Yeah. You get really creative, and combat encounters start becoming dialogue encounters. Really interesting.
Well, and then honestly, as your players are leveling, to kind of bring it back to what we started out as here.
Sorry, when yeah, that
players,
was...
Ooh. No, you're good. When the players are leveling, then that might influence their choices, you know, of being like, okay, well, I could level into this and have all these spells, but maybe I'm going to be in a region for the next 10 sessions that it's not going to be helpful. Maybe I need to get other skills, you know, maybe I need to find a fighter and get more practical skills, you know, which is just really fun. It's really fun to have the two-way street of the world influencing the players and the players influencing the world all kind of at once and creating such a dynamic living organism in a lot of ways, you know?
Yeah.
For sure.
Man. Well, that was hopefully fun. You're able to keep up with that. that'll be fun to edit later.
Magic and all kinds of stuff.
Man, do we have anything that we want to talk about before we close out here, Jared?
I don't think so.
All right.
I think it's just true of D&D, but you know, to focus back in on it, I just think it's fun to really like think outside the box as much you can when it comes to player leveling. Like, be creative, try new things. If it doesn't work, then don't do it again. You know, have an open dialogue with your table, with your players, of like, hey, I know this is how we've done player leveling in the past. I want to try something different. Let's just see how it goes. You know, don't be afraid to explore and just be creative, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Agreed.
Creativity in D&D is key.
Yeah. I mean,
That's what makes me fun.
I don't know if I would throw this out at my table necessarily, but maybe even like asking your players, like, what do you think leveling up should look like? Like, what do you want to do to level up? What do you want that to look like? And like, have them come up with some of it. Cause
yeah,
I feel like as the DMs, a lot of the like creativity pressure ends up on us. But like we've said with a million other topics, sometimes our players like kind of accidentally make up the best part of the story. And then we just latch onto it of like, oh, actually that. Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
That is really interesting to even just propose the question of when level up time comes. It's like, why is your player leveling up here? You know, why, what power is being infused into them? You know, what happened? And maybe just put it at their feet and let them describe it. Even if it's as simple as like, I felt this beast and now I'm, you know, an even better barbarian than I was before. That is kind of a fun idea to just put it on them in a lot of ways and just have them figure it out, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Man, let's go ahead and roll that D100, see what we got coming up next.
I have dice, if we need them.
Do it.
Drop one on the ground. 58.
Hang on, I got the table. Compliments of Charlie. All right, we are looking at number 58. We're going with went past it. Where the heck is it? I was also looking at the row number, not the
It's a mistake that one can make.
Nope. Reroll. We've already done puzzles. Reroll.
Oh, we have, yeah.
Yep, reroll.
10.
10.
10. Ooh, we're getting
10, 10, 10,
close
10,
to the top.
10.
That's exciting.
10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10. Where the heck is 10? Because this isn't in order.
It's not in numerical order?
No.
I think it is. I think look at column B is how I'm reading it.
Uh-oh. Pantheons and homebrew worlds.
Yeah, which is actually kind of hilarious.
That actually flows really well. It's considering we were just talking about Lathandir. So I'm pretty sure that is a Tolkien name.
It might be.
Oh no, it's Mithrandir.
Mithrandir.
Yeah, there you go. Mithrandir. I was like, not quite.
Mithrandir is
very Tolkien-esque, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, at the root of it all, Tolkien was kind of like the OG that all fantasy has basically built off of that. So,
well, that actually works really good because I have a lot to say about the four gods of my world. Because we're playing into it a lot in my game, so I'm looking forward to that, and I will be doing my homework and having some fun topics of discussion for that one.
Can't wait.
Sounds like my world might get some gods in the next 2 weeks.
There you go. See, and that's another thing. We can bounce ideas off each other and come up with cool ways to level up our world. That was on the nose, a little too much, but whatever. Whatever. We're all tired.
Level up.
Jared, shut me up. Close the show out tonight.
Guys, thank you for sticking with us. Thank you for listening. Nicole, Jeff, you guys are awesome. Charlie, we miss you. I'm
very much
Jared. We will see you all in the next episode.
Bye. See ya. Bye. Awesome. Man, we did another one.